Susan, I appreciate you taking the time to come in and talk to me about what you're doing in the government space. It's great to have you here.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
About a year or year and a half or so ago, you were on the phone. We talked about some of these same issues, and I'm wondering if we could start by talking about what you think has changed in doing business with the government, if anything, over that period of time.
I don't think a whole lot has changed. It was busy then. It's busy now. I think probably, as you know, there's a lot of pressure on networks mm-hmm. to get that transitioned, and that's probably a little hotter than it was the last time we talked.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of focus on cybersecurity, and I think we're going to start to see more procurement activity when it comes to cyber.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the hottest buzz lately is about cloud computing and how that will impact the way the government does business, both internally and with the public.
Mm-hmm. I do want to start with networks because we played some of the hearing that you appeared at and testified at before the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee a little while back. I got the impression from the way that Congressman Towns presented that hearing and titled it and so forth, going in, that he was not happy with the situation with networks. In all the news accounts, including what we put at federalnewsradio.com, you were cited as the person who was probably the most, I guess, candid about where network stands today. And yet I didn't take your comments to be particularly negative, as the perception seemed to be, about the whole contract. You said yourself networks is a little hotter now than it was last time we talked. Why is that? And where's that coming from, that heat?
Well, I think that GSA put together a great program. I think I said that at the hearing, and I will say it again. I think they were forward-thinking about all the new services agencies would want. They really tried to take into account everybody's needs. And then they went out, and they got really good rates. And so I think one of the pressures from Congress is that the rates on networks should save the government money, and so agencies should get with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that may be where Congressman Towns was coming. He talked a lot about the money that they could be saving, and he wants to see that happen. So I thought the hearing, I personally as a contractor appreciated the fact that he gave us an opportunity to speak and let him know what we thought. And we do believe it is the right contract for the right time.
Mm-hmm.
We do believe, though, that in order to make it happen, agencies are going to have to commit more resources to the transition.
What's the holdup, do you think, at the agency level where they're at the agencies that aren't jumping in with both feet?
Right. Well, I think that there are a lot of initiatives for the CIOs and the IT departments within the agencies. And the fact is they have networks with a KS that mm-hmm. work. And so they may not be as highly motivated to put the limited resources they have towards that transition as they might be for some of the other initiatives, which bring on something new.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that there's a lot of capability on networks, which will help them drive a lot of those initiatives. So, we're anxious to move ahead. One of the agencies that I mentioned in my testimony was Homeland Security. They got out early. They got started. They're almost done. They were highly motivated because when DHS was formed from a variety of other agencies,
mm-hmm.
they didn't have a single network.
Right.
They had many separate networks. So this was their opportunity to bring it all together, get savings, get efficiencies, get redundancy, get diversity, all the things that networks can provide an agency.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that's a good example of where it was a priority. It got done.
Yeah. Where can the motivation come from, or where do you think it should come from? Should it come from Congress, as in this hearing where Congressman Towns essentially says to the agencies, get with it? Should it come from maybe the vendors by being able to offer something to demonstrate to the agencies, if you get with it, you also get this extra benefit? Or where should that motivation come from?
First of all, I would say that I think we're seeing the agencies already start to accelerate. We're seeing more agencies put out their statements of work, more awards being made. So I think that the pace has quickened.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is incumbent upon the vendors to show some of the things that are advantageous in networks, not just price, but the tools and the systems and the reporting that we all put behind networks that GSA required and we've all built to
mm-hmm.
give the agencies more visibility, allow them to manage their contract better, allow them to manage their usage, allow them to implement continuity of operations with more ease. So I think that it is incumbent upon us to point those things out to agencies. And I think the, you know, the GSA is constantly in touch with the agencies and needs to continue to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And pressure from Congress never hurts.
Yeah. Do you think that the agencies are getting the right tools that they need? You said just the resources, and it's one thing to have enough money to devote toward it, but there is a lot of other resources involved in implementing something like networks and getting it together. Do they have all that they need aside from the dollars, do you think?
Well, I think it's as much a people issue as it is a pure dollar issue. You have to have people who can issue the orders, set up your billing, be available when a contractor has to come and install service at your site. You know, you have to have a contact there. One of the things that GSA made available was money for agencies to use some contractors to help with that. And so hopefully agencies will take advantage of that opportunity and bring in some third-party resources to not run the program, but at least be able to bolster it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's something we'd like to see happen.
Do you think that vehicles like this moving forward are going to be perceived, at least given that Congressman Towns framed the hearing the way that he did, as too big to eventually be advantageous? The cost savings are great. There's nobody would argue about that. But his position was, hey, we're 3 years into a 10-year program, and it looks like some places nothing's happened, so there really aren't any benefits realized in the real world. Is it possible that we'll look back 10 years from now and say that networks was one of the last of these big deals, or are they going to be here to stay, do you think?
Well, I can't forecast what the government will do, quite honestly. I do believe, however, networks is a good contract for the government. I do think it provides tremendous versatility, technology refresh. It's forward thinking. I think it's just getting past transition.
Mm-hmm.
I think once agencies make that decision on who their vendor is and they get it moving, they will start to then be more open to the other things networks provides.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, FTS, I think, had, I don't know, 9, I think, mandatory services. And Networks Universal had 39 mandatory services.
Mm-hmm.
So there are an array of things that an agency can take advantage of, including security that we talked about earlier, including putting the pieces together to create a cloud solution.
Mm-hmm.
Manage network services, custom design and engineering on forward-thinking networks. All of that's there, but they're still seeing networks as just a replacement for FTS.
Right.
If they get to networks, they'll start to see all the other things they can do.
Mm-hmm. Is everything in networks that you think needs to be there? Or, I mean, because 3 years in the technology world, mm-hmm. in the telecom world, is an eternity now. Are there services that maybe, if we were doing it over again, would be in there that aren't?
Not so much. I think the one thing that's already been added has been MTIPS, the secure internet capability that GSA put on the contract. There's some talk about creating a specific cloud service, which could be done, or literally you really can put it together with the components that are there. But there may be some move towards actually identifying it as cloud. Because of the way security was set up on networks, you can come back and refresh your security offerings easily.
Mm-hmm.
And all the equipment, which is probably the thing that's most out of date from when we first bid it, the GSA has a very easy process for updating your equipment. So, you know, for example, nobody's buying the routers that we bid 3 years ago.
Right.
Nobody's buying the security firewalls that we bid 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Better stuff today.
Right.
So that part's easy to refresh.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about cybersecurity a little bit, because one of the things, I had Mark Foreman and Karen Evans here last week, and we were talking about the ongoing struggles of the agencies to get into the mindset of security needs to be woven into all of the applications that we buy, all of the hardware that we buy, everything that every agency procures needs to have security woven into it instead of bolted on. And Mark even talked about the money savings. So above and beyond the benefits of security, it's just cheaper to do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there still is a persistent lack of ability to seemingly get to that point. What suggestions do you make when you go in and talk to agencies about security and making sure that when they're buying stuff, that it's built in from the beginning? I'm going to assume that the products,
right,
everything that you sell has some security element already
baked in. You're absolutely correct. And we've believed in that built in rather than bolted on theory for a long time. And so all of our networks services were designed with security in mind. Mm. Our data center capability for government designed with security in mind. We even built a government network and security operations center out in Ashburn specifically to meet government requirements for network for security management. Mm-hmm. So we saw that coming years ago and have been there. In terms of, you know, agencies, what we're trying to do is that every time we meet with a customer, we try to talk about security.
Mm-hmm.
Every time we do an executive briefing with agency C-levels, we bring security into it. One of the things that Verizon produced back last year and the newer versions coming up later this summer is our data breach investigation report, which basically is a compilation of 3 years' worth of forensics that we performed on various data breaches that we investigated.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been able to show the government, here are the kinds of things you need to worry about. And surprisingly, it doesn't always match with what CIOs think they should be worried about.
Uh-huh.
So this is fact. This isn't, you know, based on a survey or anything. It's fact.
Right.
And the most interesting thing is that that report covered 3 years. The report that's going to come out next year has as many breaches investigated, as many reported in 1 year as in those 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem's getting bigger, and
right.
we really have to investigate it. But what we show is that there's enough you can do to protect yourself by being really good as opposed to trying to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what these kinds of reports and the kinds of information we can provide. So right now, we see our role as providing the information. Maybe you'll buy a solution from us. Maybe you'll buy from somebody else. But the fact is the government needs to be protected.
Yeah. That idea of being very good as opposed to being perfect is a kind of a reverse transition that I'm seeing in the cyber world compared to what we used to talk about in the war on terror, where we would say the bad guys only have to be right once and
right.
we have to be perfect all the time. It seems that what I'm seeing and hearing is that it's going the opposite way when it comes to cybersecurity. People are getting comfortable with the idea that these attacks are going to happen. They're happening so often in such high volume and they're so sophisticated. We're going to stop as many of them as we can, but it's unrealistic to believe that we're going to be perfect all the time, 100%. That 99.999999 is probably going to be good enough. It's reasonable to expect that, and maybe 100% isn't reasonable anymore. Does that comport with what you're hearing when you talk to people?
I think the goal is always to be 100%.
Sure.
The fact is that in anything like this that involves technology, you know, you always got to be staying a step ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the reasons for doing this kind of analysis of what we see, because it helps us anticipate.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, Verizon, as a worldwide provider of services, you know, we have services in 159 countries around the world. We provide, you know, internet service to literally everywhere you can imagine. And we have to protect that network both from our internal operations and for our customers.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of very sophisticated tools, a lot of sophisticated capability for collecting that data and then finding a way to share it, because you just have to be able to share the data in this set.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're finding is agencies are more and more interested in understanding what we're learning and how they can apply it.
Yeah.
The other thing that I would mention when it comes to how we approach security with agencies, you need to start. You know, you just need to start somewhere because as you say, every day it may change. And so the good thing is let's put a plan together. Let's start to implement that plan.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's refresh it as often as we need to refresh it.
Yeah.
And that's what we're just finding more and more interest in what we can tell people about what we do for our own network.
Yeah.
And how they apply it. The other thing that Verizon has done just recently is to introduce a framework where other agencies, commercial entities can deposit information into this framework and become part of the analysis. So,
mm-hmm.
for example, the Secret Service is one of the agencies that has decided that they will include information in this framework that then can be shared with others in terms of what we learn.
Mm-hmm. The reason that I mentioned that 99.999% goal is not so much from the technology or the vendor end of it. It's more from the point of view of, I had a CIO tell me a couple of weeks ago, I could have a perfect network and the vendor can be doing everything they're supposed to be doing and I've done all the training and everything and I'm FISMA compliant and on and on and on. And then some goofball takes home a thumb drive, leaves it in his car and somebody steals the car and I don't know what I have to deal with from that point forward. So it's more of the people element than it is the technology that I think is driving these executives, not just the CIOs, but all the C-level people that you're talking to.
Then you're right.
To say, I'm going to get hit with something at some point, and I need to be as prepared as possible. Does that make sense?
Well, I think that does make sense. Being prepared as possible is a good thing. But the thing is to take every action you possibly can take, you know, like encrypting a laptop. So if somebody leaves their laptop on the train,
right,
you know, the thumb drive, you know, require that there be an encryption when people are saving data onto a thumb drive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some ways to get around it to protect yourself. But once again, it does depend to a certain amount on a human level. The people observe the rules.
We are past the point where the C-level people are saying, is all this security stuff really necessary, right? Everybody gets it. Uh-huh. What do they ask you the most about? In addition to what you're talking about your risk assessments and so on, what are they asking you the most, or what are they saying they need more answers about?
A lot of it is wanting to understand what tools we use to do this. You know, how far can we go? How deep into the network can we see what's going on? What kind of information can we report back on? And then probably most importantly, how do we sift through the millions of pieces of data we get in a day to find out where are the real problems?
Yeah, the needle in a haystack thing.
And so that's where the tools and your systems become very important for how do you pick out the anomalies.
Mm-hmm. How do you pick out the anomalies?
I can't tell you that, or otherwise I would, you know. But the good news is we do.
But I had to ask, you know.
You did. The good news is we do.
Yeah.
Because that's why you don't see breaches in our network.
The number, when I see the numbers, and I don't have it right off the top of my head, but when I see the numbers that different people have cited about the number of attempts to intrude on government networks every day, it's scary.
Right.
Because it really has transformed from some kid sitting in his basement in his pajamas to, I mean, all kinds of bad guy organizations out there.
It's and not just government, but I think the data breach report that will come out will show somewhere in the neighborhood of 285 million attempts in a year.
Yeah.
And these are just those that were reported to us.
Yeah, it's hundreds of attempts a day on each agency's
agency, right.
Yeah, it's really incredible. Let's talk about...
And it is organized. It's not, as you say, it's not the kid in the basement.
Yeah, and that's the most challenging because they are now have the ability... The kid in the basement didn't have a lot of money to spend. Criminal organizations and nation states have lots of money that they're willing to devote to try to get into our networks and get our stuff.
It's a lot easier than trying to physically steal something.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just it's not just like DOD, the agencies you would think of either.
Right.
Some of the agencies that I'm seeing high levels of intrusion or hearing high levels of intrusion reports about are agencies where you figure who would want their stuff, but somebody must.
Right. Well, and it's, you know, many agencies, they need to protect personal identity information of American citizens.
Yeah.
And they take it very serious. I can tell you from the folks we work with, those agencies take it very serious.
Yeah, well, I would think for no other reason, and certainly there are other reasons, but they don't want to be the name that everybody knows. They don't want to be the next one.
They don't want to be the next one, but I think they actually feel it as a sense of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. I think government employees really do take their jobs very seriously, especially when it comes to protecting, you know, the identity of a citizen or their personal information or their money or anything else.
Susan Zeleniak is a group president for Verizon Federal, my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We've been talking about security, and one area that people are a little bit squeamish when it comes to security is the cloud. I mean, we've probably done 80 kajillion shows about cloud computing and have a blog on federalnewsradio.com. The Fed Cloud blog is devoted entirely to information about moving to the cloud. And, it is still difficult for some people, both IT and outside of IT people in government, to get around the idea that I'm going to put my stuff there, especially PII, in the cloud where somebody might be able to get it and get wrap their arms around the idea that the cloud can be secured just as well as the network that I have that's centered in my own data center. Are you starting to see less resistance to that idea, or are there still just as many issues, concerns about that as there have always been?
I think there are still many issues about putting that information out in a public internet cloud.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as historical data, most agencies don't run their business using the public internet. They use it running a private internet network.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what we may see in the government in cloud computing may be an evolution first to using private clouds.
Mm-hmm.
And then perhaps actually even finding a way for agencies to share their private clouds, you know, but it would still be private.
Yeah.
As opposed to going public. I think we could see some public use of the cloud for information that's not, doesn't necessarily need to be secure, but it's great for a lot of people to have access to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, more general kinds of information that you could, you know, get, you know, if you went to the newspaper, for example,
right.
But let's put it out there and let people go get it through a public internet cloud. And I do think that agencies will see the value of cloud in general in terms of being able to better secure their internal networks,
mm-hmm.
reducing cost, reducing risk, and probably even reducing some of the costs of maintaining their network in terms of, you know, people and equipment.
If somebody like me can see the cost benefits of cloud, certainly somebody like a CIO can see it. So that doesn't seem to be the issue. The
yeah.
issue seems to be that
right.
risk reduction
right.
where people are still kind of struggling with the idea that this can reduce my risk. It certainly doesn't seem like that kind of technology. Seems like the kind of technology that could potentially increase my risk.
Right. And that's why I say most of the conversations we're having with agencies are definitely on the idea of their own secure cloud.
Mm-hmm.
Because these agencies are very big,
yeah.
and, you know, hundreds of thousands of employees and locations all over the world. And the idea of being able to have a cloud and being able to share that bandwidth capacity and get it on demand, you know, because maybe this week this sub-agency's got a great demand because something's going on, and then next week it's this one, and being
mm-hmm.
able to share that bandwidth and share those resources. And I think especially as we move to video and demands on video, I think the cloud's going to just skyrocket.
Yeah. You and I were talking before we went on the air about some of the overall bandwidth ratios that video is consuming, and there's a lot of audio, I happen to know, for the obvious reason, that's being consumed online.
Right.
What implications does that have for the federal market as they're not only trying to catch up with some of these other technology things, some of the things that the private sector's already dealt with and moved on to other things, but also dealing with the demand of the idea that when I go to the Department of whatever site, I expect the same textural experience there that I expect when I'm on eBay
right.
or Amazon.com or the Federal News Radio website or whatever website it is. I expect the same thing when I go to the agency website. What's that like from the experience that you have in dealing with the customers inside the agency?
Right. I think that you have really hit the nail on the head. I mean, even the administration, one of their early technology initiatives was to try to get consumer technology into the government
mm-hmm.
because, you know, I can't remember where it was I heard this years ago, but your last best customer experience is what you expect in your next customer experience.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even have to be the same thing. You
mm-hmm.
know, it could have been in a restaurant or a department store. When you go to the government, you're expecting the same level of service.
Yes.
You're precisely correct. And it is going to require a lot more bandwidth management on the parts of agencies. It is that's why virtualization and consolidation and is going to become very important for agencies as they look to this. But it's there. They know it.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to plan for it. Fortunately, the capacity in the network is out there to support it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think any of us are worried about the capacity being there.
Yeah.
And you know, just look at networks. The cost per megabit has gone down.
Mm-hmm.
So they can buy more
yeah.
with less money.
It's heartening to hear you say that the agencies know it and they're trying to do
mm-hmm.
Something about it.
Absolutely.
Because there's a perception that we hear all the time about how the government's supposed to be so far behind in doing this and that and the other thing. And so to know that at least the knowledge is there, and you know, those of us that work in this space know
right.
that, but it's just good to hear it, I think, every once in a while.
Well, you know, I think what we're seeing too is agencies are trying to become paperless.
Mm-hmm.
So that, for example, if you're an agency that has to, you know, is processing somebody's benefit request, it used to be that files had to be literally mailed across the country before you got your decision.
Yeah.
And today they're trying to put all those records, healthcare records and imaging and all online so that they can be moved quickly to get a decision faster. And they have to because the workload with the baby boomers aging is growing
yeah.
and they've got to be able to take advantage of technology just to keep up with the workload.
We're looking at budgets for the next couple of years that are going to be tight, to say the least.
Absolutely.
You're in a field that is really critical for the government, so it probably doesn't impact you a whole lot. But as you start to think about what budgets are going to look like, where are areas that potentially could impact the way you do business with the government? Are there any? I mean, every agency needs telecom service of one kind or another.
Right. But, you know, just, you know, today, as you and I have talked, we've talked very little about telecom. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked about security,
yeah,
and we've talked about cloud, and we've talked about, you know, how we help agencies improve an application by putting more things online. So, you know, we see the more we can help drive down the costs of processing the business of government mm-hmm. by using technology that moves in the network, that's where we can be helpful to the government.
Mm-hmm. When you and I had this conversation before, we talked a little bit about VoIP and the potential for VoIP. And at that time, you said we're kind of starting to feel that out mm-hmm. and agencies are starting to get comfortable with the idea. Again, the security issue.
Right.
Are you still seeing that progression?
And we definitely are seeing that progress. And I think once we get past the network transition,
mm-hmm.
we'll really see it just blossom because mm-hmm. it's starting to show up with some agencies on a small basis. But once they've got these, you know, a lot of them wind up running their VoIP over their private IP network.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of them are building the capacity for doing just that
mm-hmm.
so that they can move their voice to it and they'll eliminate your basic dial-up voice services.
Yeah. The wire's just going to be gone before too long, isn't it? Between wireless mobile computing, and we can talk about that in a little bit, too. That's obviously a place your company's a big player. But as we move to VoIP, there's really not going to be – you're going to have one wire run to an agency, and that's going to be about the end of it, isn't it?
Well, I mean, if you even think now about if somebody were – you know, not that we sell it to the government, but if somebody orders Fios to their home,
mm-hmm.
they can get their TV, their internet, their telephone service, all of it's coming on one connection to the mm-hmm. house.
Yeah. Well, let's not waste time. Let's talk about mobile computing and the capacity and security that are involved there. Whenever I think about mobile security in the government, I think about the directive that people at the agencies got if they were going to go to Beijing for the Olympics and they were told, take a disposable phone that because it will be stolen, it will be hacked, and you won't even necessarily know it. Just plan as though that's what's going to happen, and plan that as soon as you come back, that phone's going to get chucked because it's been compromised. Do you foresee a time when we can get beyond that and make the mobile device as secure as some agencies have been successful at making the desktop and the laptop?
I do. And, you know, one of the things we're seeing already is one of the things that has helped with the security of laptops is our ability to manage them remotely, to mm-hmm. be able to download patches, to mm-hmm. be able to see a security breach in the network coming to that laptop. So what we're already being able to provide agencies is a managed security service for their mobile devices, for their smartphones in particular, mm-hmm. the Blackberries and such. So we actually can download security updates. We can actually see when the phone's been breached. If it is lost, we literally within seconds of it being reported, it's turned off. I mean, mm-hmm. there is an awful lot already being done, and I think we'll just see that expand. But that capability is available for agencies to get today.
Okay, so there's no wait curve there.
No
that's,
wait curve.
That's available now.
Right.
When you think about, we talked a little bit about budget and how that might affect a company like yours moving forward. What about regulatory issues? And there's 914 bills about FISMA on Capitol Hill right now. I think Melissa Hathaway spelled out 40, either 37 or 41 numbers stick in my head as the number of bills on the Hill right now that have something to do with cybersecurity that agencies will have to comply with. What's that like when you're trying to build these solutions and you're not really necessarily sure what the solution is going to have to be compliant with at some point in the future?
Right. It's challenging.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's very challenging. You know, going into federal business that you face that, and so you better be prepared for it. You try to anticipate what they may or may not do, but, you know, something's always going to come up that you're going to have to go back and address and fix, and you just hope that you're given enough time to do so,
mm-hmm.
you know, so in the case of some of these bills. You know, we, like anyone else, would like to see some coordination among them to make sure that we don't have one that says do this and another says do that and there's conflict.
Right.
So the hope is that that doesn't happen. You know, as far as other regulatory activity, you know, when it comes to the FCC and broadband. FCC's always had a pretty light touch in the way they regulate broadband. We're hoping that they continue to do that because mm-hmm. we really see, you know, the spread of broadband for the government and the public in general is being important to our country. You know, it's being important to the way our country responds in the world using technology. So those are probably our two hot issues.
It seems to me that the broadband, when you're looking at regulating broadband, the model of regulation on wireless is probably a better model than the model on regulation on wired. Because for wired, you had one company for 810 years. Wireless, they said, well, we'll just let people do what they want.
Right.
And you have, what, four solid competitors just on networks.
Absolutely.
And a bunch of other companies that are out there,
and
too.
And we feel much like you do, that the broadband is wide enough among enough carriers for the market to really make those decisions. We won't have to have the kind of regulation we did when there was a monopoly in phone service.
And yet there will still be enough business to go around.
Absolutely.
I'm sure you'd like to have it all, but
of course.
but there's enough business to support.
Well, the thing is, if you're doing it right, people will buy your service, and if you're not, they won't.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's incumbent upon a provider to do the right thing by the customer.
Mm-hmm. You are very heavily, obviously, in the service business, and the solution that you provide for an agency's problem or need is not necessarily the same as what a competitor of yours would provide, you know, line for line. How do you think the agencies are doing procurement-wise at being able to weigh and being able to choose amongst the different options that are available, not just on networks, but anytime you're trying to do business? Does the acquisition workforce, do you think, have what they need to be able to weigh apples versus oranges?
I think that they are highly challenged, and I mean, I respect the acquisition workforce, but they have a challenging job because the technology changes so quickly, the needs of the agencies change so quickly, and, you know, they're sort of caught in two places. Do they put out a statement of work that really literally says, I want one of these, nine of those, eight of these, and then the government has to figure out how to make it work.
Right.
It makes the procurement easy, but it makes the implementation difficult for the agency to really get where they're trying to go.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we'd like to see are more procurements that say, here's what I want.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my end result.
Yes.
Here's the service level performances I want. Here's the key indicators that I want to meet. Here's the problem I'm trying to solve. And allow providers to get a little more creative. Because you may get a much cheaper, better solution by not telling me what pieces to put in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I may know how to do something somebody else doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'd like to see more of that. It's probably harder for acquisition officials, but if we could find a way to get there, I think the government would save a lot of money, and I think we'd get a lot more done.
I think that would be a lot more art than science. You're right. My fear is, if you went that direction, though, is if you were able to come back and say, but wait, we can do this and that, and it's not in what you ask for, but we can also do this, protest is already a big problem,
right.
And the potential is there, I think, for those to just go through the roof.
But our point is, if the statement of work gave outcomes, not components, it said, here are the outcomes I want.
Right.
You know, I need to be able to process, you know, this many healthcare records to this many locations, you know, a day, and I need to be able to sort and solve and pick them out, you know, this quickly, whatever. Give me that, and let me define the solution, as opposed to telling me I need, you know, 10 megabits of storage.
Right.
Or gigabits of storage.
Sure.
You know, that's sort of where I'm going, is tell me your outcome, and let us define a solution.
Where's the balance, you think, between what happens in the private sector, where it's very commonplace, if you want my business, we get together and we form a relationship and we might cut a deal on the golf course or whatever. Obviously, that's absolutely verboten in the government. But there's got to be some kind of a balance there for building relationships, even if it's just on a professional basis, not on a personal basis, that leads to those kinds of conversations.
Right.
It seems to me that's what we're missing out on right now, that's preventing the kind of thing that you're talking about.
There are a lot of agencies, officials that are very open about discussing their needs.
Mm-hmm.
They want to hear what industry has to say. They participate with industry in what's going on and what's possible. They come and meet with the vendors. And the more of that happens before procurement, the better proposals that agency gets.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt.
Yeah.
When the vendors And the good thing about our experience is those CIOs or CSOs, or they meet with all the vendors. They are not limiting. They are not, you know, giving anybody preference. They're very good about the way they handle themselves. Mm-hmm. But the more of that they do, the better proposals they get.
Yeah. We talked about protests a little bit. Are the protests and the volume of them to the point yet where they're just driving you nuts? I mean, it seems like every time you turn around, somebody's protesting something.
Right.
And at some point, I would think it might be beneficial to just say, you know what, we probably have a good case here, but
no,
they got to get on with their business.
Right. No, it is a frustrating experience to win business and then have it protested and to go through that long process of having the, you know, your business, your winning business upheld. And in most cases where we've been involved in that, we have our business. I really, my personal attitude towards protest is I need to have a clean, clear cut case to proceed with a protest. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really have to believe that something was done completely outside the rules.
Mm-hmm.
To protest an award. I think it doesn't do the government or the industry much good, the number of protests that are happening out there. I think it gives us all a bad name to the American public.
Yeah. What do we do, do you think, to try to cut down the number of protests? Or just the whole volume, I mean, the depth of the protests and the time that they go on and on and on and all of that. What do you think is the solution there?
You know, I think we talked earlier that acquisition officers are quite challenged, even in number.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we've all seen where GSA's trying to recruit more and train more and bring more folks into that fold. So I think, you know, more acquisition offices is clearly going to help.
Right.
But I do think that making sure that, you know, if you open discussions with all the vendors, that you go through all those discussions, let everybody correct those items in their bid that you found in error or not meeting up to your requirements. Make sure that everybody, you know, and once you open that discussion, level the playing field.
Mm-hmm.
Don't decide that all of a sudden, oh, we got to finish up, so we're going to close it, and you didn't really close it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's probably my best advice, is if you open up discussions, then take them to the end. Otherwise, don't open them up.
We're starting to run out of time, but as I mentioned a couple of times, we had a similar conversation to this a year and a half ago. If we sit down again, as I hope we will, in 12 or 18 months or maybe even sooner and have this conversation again, where do you think we'll be as far as issues like the acquisition workforce, issues like the deployment of the networks contract and so on? Are we on an upward spiral, do you think, an upward trend as far as getting some of this stuff done?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that networks will certainly be moving in the direction it needs to. I think we'll be, you know, if we talk about 18 months from now, let's hope we're done.
Yeah.
As far as the acquisition workforce, I think GSA is making a really strong effort to go out and recruit. And part of that's going to be they're going to have to be willing to, you know, perhaps pay on a different scale or hire at a different level to bring those kinds of folks into the government. But they are really important to the government being able to do its business.
Yeah.
I mean, it starts and ends with them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we'll see progress there. I think we'll see a lot more definition of cybersecurity by the government, what they expect cybersecurity to be on the DOD side, what is happening with the cyber command.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we may actually start to see the implementation of some cloud, you know, not just talk about it, but actually see more of it starting to move. And I think we'll start to see more of that consumer technology showing up in the way the government interacts with citizens, especially over the web.
Last item, I'm going to commit what you probably consider to be a cardinal sin. I'm going to make you quit Verizon and go to the government side and put you at GSA or one of the agencies. What would you do your first day or a couple days or a week on the job to make it easier for the government to get what they need and do business with the vendors?
Okay, so I'll start out by saying I worked for the government for 12 years.
Okay.
So it's easy for me to put myself back on that side of the table. And I did, was responsible for the procurement of communications capability. So
you know what you're doing already.
So I think, you know, if I were on the government side, the biggest thing would be communication. Communicate with industry, with vendors. You know, hold as many meetings as you can fit in your schedule with the outside, not just with your internal folks. Because, you know, I'm going to assume I have a good internal staff and they're going to take care of things. Meet as much as I can with industry to know what's going on and meet with my peers in the government as often as I can to understand what's going on and where we might work together. I really think that's what the public expects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the government's going to take advantage of what the industry has to offer and is going to share mm-hmm. among themselves.
So I imagine you're probably a fan of Martha Johnson's style then, because if I'd heard her say collaboration once, I've heard her say it right. 5,000 times since she's been in there.
And the fact is that we didn't even talk about that today, but great collaboration tools are coming from all this technology. It mm-hmm. really will be easier for the government to collaborate.
Well, that will have to be where we get into this conversation next time. And let's not wait a year, year and a half to do it again. I appreciate your time today. It's been great to have you.
So much. I really appreciate being here. It's an honor. Thank you.
Susan Zeleniak is Group President for Verizon Federal, my guest on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.